welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper, and not by the third man in the studio, Rick Steves, who's out and about roaming to and fro throughout the Midwest. Is Ronald J. Martin, as is often his wont. Yes. And Pipe, I think I figured this out, man. Let me run a theory by you.
All right.
I think I figured out that in the Sojourn Network, the way that they keep their congregations happy with their pastors is to never actually have the pastors at home and preaching.
So yeah, or maybe like 50% of the time. I mean, it's pretty sparse, it seems.
Yeah, like nobody goes to more conferences than Big R. And I think he must be home and preaching like two Sundays out of the year.
I think Substance Church must also be part of at least three denominations or networks, because he's at some denominational meeting or something, but it's not Sojourn.
Okay.
So I think it's the Evangelical Free Meetings, if I recall correctly, which take place in my lovely hometown of Minneapolis. It's the right time of year to visit. If you want to visit Minneapolis, you go between July and like mid-October. So,
dude, it's sunny. It's cool. The Vikings are 2-0. Life is good.
Yep, Vikings are 2-0, although by the time this releases, they might be 2-1, considering they just lost their starting running back and their starting left tackle. So,
dude, how bad is Adrian Peterson hurt? I saw like something go along the scroll on that, but I didn't catch the whole story.
I think it's a patella tendon thing. I might have the ligament wrong, but he's going in for surgery, and so it could be like anywhere from 2 to 7 weeks.
Oh no, man, that's horrible news.
And then they lost their left tackle for the season, which that may not be a terrible thing, because he has been a revolving door. I mean, he's
been a bit of a turnstile, hasn't he?
Just brutalized by the Packers. Now the Vikings beat them, so all was fine in the end, but that he did not do well.
Exactly. Well, man, let's focus on the positives.
Yes.
Let's focus on the 2-0 and the fact that there's reason for hopefulness in Minnesota beyond just the fact
and
that
somehow my Twitter whipping boy Sam Bradford looked like not just a competent quarterback, but like an above average NFL quarterback in that game. I did not expect that.
It's crazy, isn't it?
I was pleasantly
up is down, down is up.
I was pleasantly surprised.
What can we rely on anymore in this world, Pipe, besides Ronnie being on the road?
Ronnie being on the road, denominational meetings, and the fact that the Vikings will still rip my heart out at some point in the next 3 months. It's going to happen.
Indeed. Those are some things that we know to be true.
And Cleveland stinks.
Dude, I don't think Chicago's going to win a game the whole year.
Dude,
they're so bad.
They look horrific.
They look so bad. You know what? I feel a little bit emboldened and free to talk about sports with Big R not here.
That's I know. He would be just sighing.
He'd be sighing. He'd be sniffing and rolling his eyes.
Eating granola bars.
Right. Eating quinoa. Chewing the quinoa loudly accusatory way.
You know what? I will say this to our listeners.
Yeah.
Please, by all means, keep the pictures coming of random quinoa products you run across. They never cease to make me laugh when you guys tweet those on Facebook. I mean, it's like quinoa puffs and pumpkin spice quinoa, and I mean, it's amazing what people send. So keep it up.
Yeah, you gotta fill me in on this stuff, man, because I don't see all that.
That's right. You're not on the Twitters.
No, I'm not on the Twitter.
All right, I'll text them along next time.
Yeah, hit me with some quinoa pictures, man, because I'll be amused in a similar way. Now, if Ronnie's in Minneapolis at it's an EV-free conf and not a Sojourn. Sojourn, he'd definitely be eating some quinoa.
Right.
These EV-free guys, though, they strike me as more of a khakis and a button-down kind of crowd.
Well, EV-free is like, they're just about as middle of the road as you get. So, you're talking like... Yeah, you're talking khakis and a polo, or like jeans with like maybe a button down tucked in, maybe some penny loafers.
Yeah, penny loafers.
Yeah.
If you want to get really casual.
Neatly trimmed facial hair as opposed to like bushy facial hair.
Yep. Yep.
And they're let's see, if they were gonna go to a restaurant, it's gonna be more like
you're looking at a chicken Caesar salad.
Yeah, like an Outback Steakhouse kind of place, or like if they're in Minnesota and they want to do something local, they're going to go eat some walleye. They're not going to eat go do kale and stuff.
Yeah, they're going to a walleye place, like the kind of place that has like a Cessna Citation hanging off the ceiling.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Probably some moose antlers somewhere.
Some moose antlers.
Right.
And you know what? When you're in Minneapolis, that's what you should do, man.
Well, Minneapolis has a ton of great restaurants, and they are not going to experience most of them, would be my guess.
Dude, Minneapolis is kind of the – it's kind of piped the perfect combination between like upper Midwestern practicality meets like there is a thriving hipster population.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, you really get both. I mean, you can, and you got your like, you know, middle America, Mall of America, excess and decadence kind of crowd too. So, you really cover all the bases up there.
Yep. And the year round stocking cap almost makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Minneapolis, man, the city of dreams. Also dreamy pipe is the fact that we have two new sponsors.
We do.
So we've climbed out of the proverbial pit with the lion
on the snowy day. That's right.
On the snowy day. And we've moved on, man. We've been put on to, I won't say bigger and better things, but different things.
Yeah. We're not chasing the lion anymore either.
We've let the lion go.
That's right.
We just let the lion win.
Yeah. Whatever. He's faster than we are. Good. Good exactly. luck, lion.
Exactly. So tell us about what we do have, Pipe.
We have our first sponsor is Logos, who we've had sponsor us a few weeks ago. So Logos 7 we released a little bit earlier this fall. It's their newest and most updated edition with a whole bunch of new features. So for those of you who are in ministry or are students of theology, Bible, anything like that, Logos is something to look into. It's when you look at it, the price point, you will probably get some sticker shock because it's not cheap. But what you get with it is this incredible suite of tools in terms of study tools and resourcing tools, and all you can basically integrate every resource that they have on any topic or any text. So if you're working on something on Isaiah or something on 1 John or whatever, it'll pull all that in. But you can buy an entire library at once. So instead of having to spend, you know, $10 per book, you can get them really for almost like a 50, 60, 70, 80% discount per book, depending on which package you get. That's why the price is so high, because you're buying all of these resources along with this incredible, powerful suite of tools. So if you're a pastor or something like that, see if you can get your church to pay for it for you. It'd be pretty nice. It'll really help you with sermon prep if you're a professor, if you're a teacher, anything like that. So Logos 7, you're going to want to go to logos.com/happyrant and see the special offer they have there. They have it discounted right now. And then you'll also get a free copy of free digital copy of Spurgeon's commentary on Philippians. And since we're all the bearded reformed crowd, that seemed like a good offer. So logos.com/happyrant. Check that out. Just go poke around and look at what Logos is and offers. It's pretty amazing, and you will likely be convinced to consider it. Our second sponsor is a new one. We haven't had these guys sponsor before. It's something called Ever Accountable. And so, Ted, do your kids don't have phones yet, do they?
Our son Tristan has he has like a flip phone, but it's okay. Like the least smartphoney thing we could find.
So,
for him.
So no, you know, no apps, no internet access.
Yeah, no apps, like no internet. Yeah.
So my daughter, my oldest daughter is almost 11 and has been asking for a phone for about 2 years, and I'm hoping to put her off for about 2 more years. We'll see if I can.
Good luck with that.
Yeah,
man.
I don't know that I'll be able to do it. But Ever Accountable is something that I would strongly consider if she did have a phone, because it is it's a reporting system that can keep track of any internet activity through apps, through web browsers. So whatever they're looking at on Facebook, on Instagram, on Snapchat, on whatever, and then also web browsers, you know, it can what they viewed on YouTube. But rather than blocking content, which I'm sure some parents would like, it actually reports back. So you can use this as an accountability tool between friends. So it has a covenant eyes aspect to it, but it's mm-hmm. fully mobily integrated. As a parent, I think I would like this because it sets the stage for a conversation instead of just sort of keeping them from tripping over their own dumb decisions, which is not a bad thing. But I would rather know what they're doing, and then also be able to converse with them if need be. So they have some really interesting stats. One is that they have a 90% success rate at eliminating pornography use for people who have it installed. So that doesn't mean that 10% of pornography gets through. It means that 10% of people are really persistent in finding ways to look at porn, which is not surprising. And then they also have a number of just user testimonials talking about how this has increased trust between spouses, how it's opened the door for conversations with kids or accountability partners. So they have a special offer, and this is one you really can't turn down because it costs you absolutely nothing. If you go to everaccountable.com, so everaccountable.com, and then use the code HAPPYRANT, you can get 60 days for free, and they don't even ask for a credit or debit card. So it's not like 60 days and then you get billed because you forgot about it, but just 60 days to try it out and see how it works. So if you're a parent whose kids have phones, if you are spouses and if this has been an issue, you want to build trust, you just want to have a safeguard in place, something to kind of help as a check and balance in some of these ways, go to everaccountable.com. Get your 60 days free. Try it out. I suspect that you will find it to be beneficial. At the very least, and one guy said this, he said, just knowing that somebody else can see what I'm looking at is a helpful check just to remind me of the integrity I ought to have. So everaccountable.com, use the code HAPPYRANT, get 60 days free. I suspect that you and your family, your accountability partner, whatever, will benefit from that.
Excellent, man. Excellent. Yeah, I dig that, man. That looks like a really good, a really great product. I'm on their website right now. And yeah, for those of us who have kids, or just those of us who are people ourselves,
yes, who are human,
who are human ourselves, exactly. I think that looks great. So I will be checking that out as well. Now, Pipe, we had a little bit of a text exchange this morning with Rick Steves, with our travel companion Ronnie Martin, in which he texted us a picture of the gathering that he was at. And it looked like they were just in a standard meeting room, right?
Yes.
Like drop ceiling, fluorescent lights. This is a denominational meeting, so they were probably doing things like approving minutes, and I don't know what happens at accountability meetings. Do you? Or not accountability? denominational meetings.
No,
yeah.
But okay. Freudian, so I'm looking at the photo right now, and here's what I see. I see 1, 2, 3 plaid button downs.
There you go.
But
standard.
But two of them are worn with khakis, and one of them is tucked in.
Okay.
I see 2 polos, 1 tucked in, 1 untucked, and then I see 1 button down with sweater vest combo.
Nice.
Not a single hipster-looking person among them. I imagine like Ronnie has to be like their hipster mascot or something.
Dude, Ron is in a hipster-free environment right now, Pipe. I wonder how he's dealing with that. I wonder if it makes him nervous.
Maybe he brought the khakis that he had to buy when he went to Romania earlier.
Dude,
this
I'd
summer.
Love to see those khakis, but because I bet you they're skinny hipster khakis.
Skinny khakis.
Dude, our boy isn't just buying off the rack Dockers at JCPenney's.
He's not buying Gap Standard or whatever.
Dude, you better believe he's got a special kind of retrofitted khaki that he's working with. But anyway, so this touched off a text from you where you sent a picture from another worship kind of context that you were in, and I asked the question, what's the weirdest non-church worship context you've been in, meaning that it seems like as Christians, man, and we both grew up in the church, we both grew up going to church type meetings, it seems like you'll be at a random meeting where business is happening and they'll be like, okay, we're about to approve the 2017 fiscal year budget, but before we do, and the lights go down and the guy gets up with the guitar, let's just everybody stand with me if you're able. And you end up singing 2 songs. Has this happened to you, Pipe?
Oh, it's happened. Yeah. I mean, thankfully I've worked in slightly more businessy contexts where it's a little bit more subtle than that. It's more like, let's open with prayer and a devotional. We're going to have a marketing strategy meeting.
Right.
We're talk about how to sell items for
how
money.
How to sell items and
make
money.
Profit.
Yeah. Right.
And,
right.
But we're going to open with, editor so-and-so's reflections on Romans 6.
Yeah,
absolutely. I don't get it. This feels whiplashy. but yes, then there's the guitar. You know, let's pull that out. And
yeah,
I feel like that the context where that always felt the most out of place to me was when you were doing something really fun. Like think about youth group.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, it's a pool party. So
dude, it's a pool party, or you're playing basketball.
Yeah, everybody's soaking wet and the hot dogs are on the grill and you're playing water basketball or dunking your friends or trying to impress girls by doing flips or whatever.
Right.
And then somebody blows the whistle and everybody clears out of the pool. And then you go sing, 4 worship songs in a circle while getting bitten by mosquitoes.
And you're starving because all you want is that hot dog.
Right. And
you know,
now you're like, let's wrap this thing up. I need some Fritos and hot dogs. And so it's the wedging of worship into fun.
Dude, it's so funny that way. Yeah, the wedging of worship into fun or wedging it into business. So I was at a meeting at our university the other day, and you know, we're a Christian college, so we get a little bit of a mulligan on this, but it was a meeting about classroom technology. So it was like a sub like, you know, making sure the computers work and everybody has internet access. And yeah, and beforehand, the lady was like, you know, does anybody have any prayer requests? Sort of like, you know, talking about, you know, your Aunt Mildred's going into the hospital. And it's like, I met you 2 minutes ago. You know, I didn't even know who you were before.
Did you just shout out Unspoken?
Yeah, Unspoken, man. I got a couple Unspokens, two of them, you know, so if you could.
No, but, the prayer request is a really interesting one. Yeah, because it's one thing. I think opening a meeting in prayer is one of the coolest things that happens when you work in a Christian context.
Oh, dude, for real, man.
It is an acknowledgement, you know, that we need help. It's an acknowledgement of thankfulness. It is essentially stating we need God's help with this. I think that's awesome. I think it's weird when you, instead of opening up in prayer for the meeting, you open it up and say, hey, anybody have anything we should pray for? And somebody's like, yeah, my son-in-law, Dave, broke his leg in a biking accident, and he's laid up for a couple weeks.
Pipe, now tell me, what's your etiquette? Because I sat by a guy who, like, you know, was very pointedly, like, scribbling in his notebook, like writing down the prayer requests. But for me, I'm like, I'm not going to do that because for real, I'm probably not going to ever pray about it.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. So I just sit there, but then I feel like a jerk for just sitting there, you know?
I think it's – there's a big, wide, safe area between pointedly scribbling in your notebook and you know, like crossing your arms and rolling your eyes.
Oh,
and
yeah, so I wasn't doing that.
So just sort of like being tuned in and, you know, making eye contact, nodding every once in a while.
Yeah.
Nodding in the fact that, like, you're listening, you're not tuning out, which is not always easy for me. I find tuning out to be exceptionally easy, but I think that's okay. And it's not as if anybody is expecting, I don't think anybody's reasonably expecting you to go home and remember Dave, the son-in-law's leg, you know, and come back a week later and say, so how's Dave?
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. If they are expecting that, I think they misunderstood the context.
Exactly. Pipe, now, have you gotten adept at, like, looking like you're paying attention but actually zoning out?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I
feel like I got great at that in college. I mastered that. That may be the only thing I learned as an undergrad, actually.
But these are what they call soft skills.
Yep,
because these are the things that take you into the world so that you avoid many speed bumps, you avoid much boredom. You can engage your mind on much more interesting things while someone drones on and on about, you know, whatever pivot table that they're showing up on the screen. And that's a skill to master for sure. It's also important when you have children.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's
because
huge
they talk endlessly.
Yeah. They really do, man. They have so much to say. Well, Pipe, we are in the business of having a lot of things to say because we have our own super successful radio program. And one of the things that we piloted on this program many, many months ago was a bit called Gut Check with Ted.
Yes.
And I don't know if there's been internet activity suggesting that people want that back, but that was one of the topics that you threw out today. So.
Indeed, there has. In fact, it's been periodic over the month since we did it last. Was Gut Check with Ted? Please bring it back. So we periodically throw out a request. What should we rant on? And there's been consistency with this. So we decided to bring it back. This may be the first time we've done this since Steven left the podcast. So.
Dude, that's crazy. I think it is, man. Yeah, this was always a bit between me and Steven. Where Steven would, so the setup here is you just kind of drop, you know, a word or a phrase, and then I have to immediately respond to it.
Yeah, and if we decide to riff on it a little bit, we do so. Yeah. If not, Ted's take is, I mean, that is, it is the gut take on this. So
it's the gut take. It's the last word.
Yep. So here goes Gut Check with Ted, our inaugural non-Steven edition.
Ooh.
So phrase number one, Tim Tebow playing pro baseball.
you know, more power to him. If I had that kind of athleticism, even if it was limited, I would go for it, man. I've had the hardest time in the world quitting competitive sports, so I would be the biggest kind of hypocrite if I like lobbed the first stone at Tim Tebow. Now, what I hate about it is it's brought back Pipe all of the Tebow apologists.
Yes.
And I think I texted you, I would rather take a beating than spend 2 minutes with a Tebow apologist. These people are the worst. They're the most insufferable people because they connect everything that Tebow's doing to, like, you know, God moving in the universe. I mean, exactly.
They are as close to blasphemous as you can get while still being a pompous, pious person.
It's terrible.
It's crazy.
It really is. It's an amazing mix of like pomposity and blasphemy all in one like tweet.
And
or
because
email.
Because it's veiled in, you know, Turin's shroud, you can't make any argument against them.
There's no argument.
You insulted Jesus Christ.
Dude,
no,
you did.
I insulted a man who wouldn't play H-back because of his ego.
Yeah. So you and I are like the most horrible people in the world for suggesting that maybe it doesn't matter whether Tebow plays baseball or not. Right. You know?
Well, and I agree with you. I think it'd be awesome if he succeeded. It would be amazing to me because he's, I think, 29 now or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not an easy time to pick up baseball for the first time since high school.
Exactly.
I'm still enormously bothered that something in his mindset wouldn't let him switch positions in the NFL, because I strongly believe he would have been a good NFL player at tight end or fullback or something, and he just
I totally agree. And I think it bothers me too, probably because I would have at some point in my life, I would have like literally given my right arm to play one game in the NFL.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's such a dream. It was probably an unhealthy idol, I'm sure. But yeah, the fact that like he wouldn't change positions to keep that job. Yeah, it was perplexing to me. But that being said, right. I do, and this is getting maybe way more into Tebow than we want, but
he's a black hole, isn't he?
He's a black hole, man. The show is gone. Rachel the Held Evans. But I do actually have sympathy for Tebow on one level, because I think his life reached like a DEFCON level of craziness way before most people's does. You know what I mean?
It was when he was a junior in college.
Yeah.
It has been all downhill since he was 21 years old.
I'm sure I've told you this off the air or on the air. I think I've mentioned it, but I spent a day with his family because I was a candidate to maybe write his book at one point. And like the level of crazy was just off the charts, man. It was madness.
Like, so, like craziness circumstantially, or like they are in crazy people?
Dude, I think both. I don't know if they're actually crazy people, but like, I think at that time, the fame had made them crazy.
Yeah.
You know, as it would for most of us. So, I mean, again, far be it for me to lob the first stone, but yeah, the guys had like a freakishly abnormal life from the get-go.
Yes.
And it's only gotten worse, but you know what? You know what's funny, Pipe? Of all the inflammatory stuff that we've said on this show over the last year and a half, I bet we're going to get more heat for this than anything we've ever done. Because, dude, you make fun of Tebow, it's like making fun of somebody's kid.
Yeah.
Like, it's like punching somebody's kid in the face.
It's like making fun of God's child, Ted.
Right, man.
That's what it is.
I know.
Well,
I know.
Let's move on to something else that all people right. have a deep and abiding, insane affection for, and that is pumpkin spice everything.
Oh. You know what's funny? Sorry, I was just taking a drink, not a pumpkin spice. I was talking with my class today. I teach this class called PR writing.
Yeah.
So, you know, much like it sounds. But we were talking about coffee culture, actually. And I've got a guy in my class who's a barista. And I'm such a Philistine, man. I still feel weird about calling a guy a barista because it just sounds feminine. You know what I mean? And again, I'm probably going to get hatred for that. Apologies all around, but
trigger warning.
But so he's explaining like cold brewing and pour overs, and we had a laugh about this show, about the fact that I had to learn about a pour over from the show. So I don't understand pipe coffee culture. That being said, I like certain aspects of it. I'm not a pumpkin spice guy because I don't like cinnamon. So pumpkin spice is a no go for me. Because of the cinnamon.
And it's a no-go for me because I don't like pumpkin.
There you go, man. We're both out on it, man. That's something that neither of us can enjoy.
You know what's funny? I don't tend to enjoy almost any seasonal flavors.
Yeah.
No, like to me, if it's a seasonal thing, like if it's that good, why do we only have it for about 2 months out of the year?
Dude, you know what I'm down
like
with,
eggnog.
Though? You know what I'm totally down with? Like a peppermint mocha around Christmas time. That's
I can
heavenly.
See that.
Yeah,
I could see that. I mean, I should say there, I think there are seasonal based on the weather. I arbitrarily am totally cool with seasonal based on the holiday. I'm not as cool with, but Now, the thing that I find exceptionally random is that pumpkin spice has made it into nearly every – I mean, it's like somebody literally sent me a picture, I think, of pumpkin spice quinoa puffs. And I was like, that sounds like vomit. But
that does sound like vomit.
They are everywhere. So you've got like pumpkin baked goods and pumpkin prepackaged goods and pumpkin cereal and pumpkin Pop-Tarts. Like,
now I'll tell you this, man. All irony and snark aside. So my lady does she does baking for the two hipster coffee shops on our campus, mm-hmm. and she has a chocolate chip pumpkin muffin that's absolutely to die for.
See, man. I think it's I can get down with that.
Dude, it's so good. It just tastes like a piece of cake.
Right.
You know?
It's like spice cake.
It's like spice cake with nice like chunks of chocolate mm-hmm. in it. It's unbelievable, dude.
Well, well, let's end this one on a happy note. I just keep that in mind. That sounds amazing. All right, next question or next phrase. Backing into parking places.
Oh, dude, now I'm going to go off on this, man. And my kids can tell you this. I'm like the worst human being in a car. I just turn into a monster, and I have to repent of most of what comes out of my mouth when I'm driving, especially in a crowded context. But, dude, my kids can tell you when somebody backs into a parking space and it like clogs up the whole flow of the parking lot, I go bananas, dude. I go off.
I'm not a violent person, although people would think that I am based on some of the things I've said on this podcast and how I teach my kids. I never have a greater urge to drag somebody out of their car and just beat them.
Oh, me too. 100%, man. Because here's the thing. Dude, it's so selfish. You know what I mean? It's so self-centered because you have no regard for anyone else who's in the parking lot who like wants to get somewhere.
The only reason to back into a parking place is if you're robbing the store and need to get away fast.
Dude, get out of here with that, man, with your back in.
Oh,
you know?
I had a verbal altercation with a lady the other day because she pulled into it was a tiny parking lot. You know, it's like four spots on either side, so you can turn right or left.
Yeah.
And then it's immediately off the street, so there's no driveway in. So she pulls into the parking lot and I pull in right behind her trying to get out of the street so cars can go by. And she wants to back into one remaining spot.
Oh my goodness.
And I just pull into it because she had pulled past it. And I just get out and walk into the restaurant, and she rolls down her window, and she's like, I was going to take that spot. And I just said, ma'am, you pulled past it.
That's right.
Like, I think that's the rule. If you pull past a parking spot, you are SOL. Like, your number, you missed your number. So
– yeah, you don't get 20 minutes you don't get 20 minutes to, like, back into your spot, man.
Plus, I've seen too many Nashville drivers try to function their car in reverse. She had about a 2% chance of being able to actually back into that spot.
Oh, dude, you know she was going to screw it up. She was going to end up like 1 millimeter away from the car next to her.
And parked at a 45-degree angle, yes.
Oh, it was going to be a mess, man. Know your limitations. And you know what? Yeah. I know my limitations. I didn't grow up on a farm. I didn't grow up like backing a tractor into like a little space. I drive a Cadillac, man. That thing's huge. I can't back that thing anywhere. It's all I can do to park it in a regular spot the regular way.
And here's the thing. Like, I can back a car because I grew up driving normal cars, and I drive a normal-sized car now in the city where it's parallel parking. But if I miss a spot, I don't back into it unless it's a completely, like, nobody else is around. I'll just go around and find the next open spot because I don't want to be a jerk.
Exactly, so, man. Dude, I feel like that's, like, that's driving etiquette 101. They ought to teach that in, like, driver's ed, you know?
Ugh, yes. All right. Next one.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp.
Oh, boy. I tell you what, I think I like Johnny Depp. I can't point to a lot of specific examples, but he had a movie that I liked where he was a writer and he was in a cabin and he had cool glasses. Do you know which one I'm referring to?
Was that called? It wasn't called The Cabin because that was a horror one. Was it called the Room?
The Room, the Window, the Cabin.
Yeah, it was something. It was the something. Yeah.
But I think I liked it because it had to do with writing and it was a little suspense.
Wasn't sort of a split personality one or something? There was a twist at the end.
Split personality. There was a little twist, and he just had a really cool look, man. And to be completely candid, like, he looked the way that like we dream of ourselves looking as writers.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like a quintessential bohemian writer look.
Quintessential bohemian writer look. A little cabin in the woods. You know, the beautiful baby hipster glasses. Yep. Before that became a thing, and before that got run into the ground, like. You know, he was rocking that beforehand. So yeah, I'm all in on Johnny Depp.
Yeah, I just wish he would stay away from who's the weird movie maker? Is it Tim Burton?
Yeah, Tim Burton.
Yeah, I just wish he would stay away from Tim Burton because I feel like Johnny Depp when he does dramatic stuff, like, yeah, when he actually does, like, plays a character is really good.
Like normal linear, like non-musical type movies. You know, he does a really nice job.
But he just sort of gravitates to the really bizarre these days. And I feel like Jack Sparrow comes out in every character he does now. That's sort of
that's true.
He just sort of falls back on Jack Sparrow.
He got a little attached to the guy liner, you know? And it's permeating everything now.
All right, last one. Yeah. I'm really interested to hear your take on this because I don't know which way it'll fall. Taunting penalties in the NFL.
Oh, dude. Yeah, this one is complex, Pipe. There's many, many facets to the issue. As I've said before on here, ad nauseum, football is it's a violent game. It's a nasty game for nasty people, right? So it's not, you know, it's not Sunday school out there.
Yeah, and it's not tennis at the country club.
It's not tennis. You know, it's not a country club sport, man. If you don't like the violence, like, get out. Football's not for you. That being said, I'm not a fan culturally and as a viewer of guys dancing around and celebrating after every play. It's tedious. It wears me out. It's obnoxious. Like you caught a 3-yard hitch with a 9-yard cushion and you're dancing around. Get out of here with that.
Do you want to explain hitch and cushion to our listeners, or are we just talking to the football fans right now?
We're talking to the football, but I'm going to explain it because I feel like if Ronnie was here, I would explain it to him.
All right.
So a cushion means if you're a corner, if you're a cornerback, which is the guy that stands across from the receiver and tries to cover him, if you're playing off, that's called a cushion.
Yeah, so you're giving 5 or 6 steps of space.
You're giving some space because you're afraid that guy's going to go long with you. So if I'm the receiver and I just run a little hitch, so if I like run 3 steps off the line of scrimmage and turn around and catch the ball, like I've done nothing amazing in that context. But yet guys they'll get up and dance around and taunt after that. And that's something that I just can't stomach, man.
So here's the twist on this is the number of asinine rules the NFL has put in place about what is and is not taunting. So, for example, if you ran that 3-yard hitch and then gained 2 more yards because you're 6 feet tall and you fell forward, and then you danced around like a fool, there's no taunting penalty. But if you did it with a teammate, or you flipped the ball away from the referee, then there's a penalty. So, like, they've instituted these rules about what is and is not taunting, and I don't know. I do not care at all about taunting. I feel like there are enough violent things that happen in football that if somebody annoys you by taunting, you will have an opportunity to
go get him two plays later. Yeah, absolutely.
Or to just shut him down so he doesn't have anything else to taunt about. Like, it is the most aggressive man-to-man sport there is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't care at all. I think the NFL's rules on taunting they can't figure out how to handle domestic violence. They can't figure out how to handle drugs. They can't figure out how to handle player safety. But goodness sakes, if they can take the celebrations out of the game, they have mastered that. So,
dude, you know what sucks about the NFL? Dude, it's like a giant like university. You know what I mean? They got 1,200 committees, and the rule book is like 4,000 pages long. And you know, we're doing a study on this, and we're focus grouping that. It's like, you know what? That's not fun, man. Like, just line up and play football. And show the product, and I don't know, get out of the morality business and get out of the, like, I don't know, trying to control everything business, because Pipe, you're absolutely right. And one of the great things about football is the law of the jungle. It's a self-regulating enterprise. Yeah. Like, if you're a jerk, it's going to come back around on your head, man.
Unless you're an amazing football player who's a jerk, in which case you are the king of the jungle.
Like, you're the king of the jungle.
Good for you.
But it comes around eventually, man, and that's what's great about it. It always comes around eventually.
Yeah,
and you get great contrast. You get great foils. You know, for every, like, Richard Sherman, Josh Norman kind of character, there's a you know, a Barry Sanders or an Adrian Peterson or somebody who just kind of quietly goes about their business. So, I don't know.
I just don't – you know, I watch a lot of football every Sunday. Not as big of a college fan. The number of times I see a striped jersey talking to the camera, it's just
– dude, it's crazy.
Go away. The refs are not the stars of the game, and the NFL needs to figure out how to get them – just make them go away.
Dude, I feel like the penalty thing has been out of control this year so far.
Well, apparently because the reason I brought this up is because the unsportsmanlike conduct rules changed this year. And so if you get 2 of them, you get ejected. In the past, it was just sort of there was no ejection rule. They have already called something like 2/3 as many unsportsmanlike conduct penalties as they did all of last season.
Dude, it's literally, it's out of control. And another thing that's out of control is the rules and the nuances about the level of contact that you can have with a ball carrier, with a quarterback.
Targeting.
I was watching a game. It was a Lions and Titans game. Tight game. Ugly game. Not good.
It was really bad.
It was really bad. But we were in the fourth quarter. You probably watched this. And it was a pivotal time. The Titans were driving. And a Lions defensive lineman broke through the line and was trying to sack Mariota and, like, made contact with his hand to the head of Mariota.
Yeah.
It, not in a violent way, though. It was almost like a caress. Yeah. It was like if I was gently stroking, like, my wife's cheek. You know, this is how violent the contact was. Like, his hand merely came into contact with Mariota's helmet. Flag. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we could probably do an entire podcast on dumb rules in the NFL. I don't know that anybody would listen. I have a list of complaints in my mind that we should probably move on to whatever's next, because this could devolve quickly.
It really could, man. Well, whatever is next is another little segment that we've kind of teased at on this program, and it's called Guilty Displeasures. I think we've done Guilty Pleasures before.
We've done some unpopular opinions before, yeah.
Yeah, we've done unpopular opinions, Guilty Pleasures, which doesn't really work for us because none of us feel guilty about the stuff that we like. But Guilty Displeasures, Pipe, is things that we dislike that everyone else seems to like, and so we feel bad about it. And I'm going to throw this one to you first because I honestly forgot about this topic, and I got to think of a couple. So I want you to get us started.
All right. So my first one, I have a few, and they are the thing that makes me feel guilty about these is is that people I respect like this one. You know, it's one that people I really respect like this, and so I don't know why I don't. I feel a little bit inadequate because of it, and it's Marilynne Robinson's novels.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
So, talk about that, man. Gilead, I have tried to read a couple of them and I can't make it past the first couple pages. Like, they just.
Yeah.
And it's, I read it and I go, she's clearly a gift, like.
Right. Gifted writer,
no disrespect. Supremely gifted user of words and sentences.
Yep.
And it's, there's no hook. They don't get me. Yeah. I don't care. And, but people love these. I mean, these are the books that people say are like the best novels, the best depiction of humanity, the best characters, the most moving. Yeah. And I can't do it. And I don't feel like those people are wrong. I feel like I'm probably wrong.
Dude, right. And that's the whole concept of this bit, right? Like things where something on the literary tip that I feel that way about is anything like Lord of the Ringsy, Hobbity. All that stuff, that C.S. Lewis, Narnia, like
you don't do any fantasy stuff.
I don't do any fantasy. I've tried to.
So if there's dragons or magic, it's just
dude. If there's dragons or magic, I'm out, man.
See, I love that stuff.
Dude, that's great. Most people do. Like, I feel like I'm a freak. Like, there's something wrong with me. You know, I want to like it, Pipe. I really do want to like it, but I've tried and tried again. And it's been a no-go for me each and every time.
Well, I think I did say on one unpopular opinions bit that we did a few months ago that that the Harry Potter books are better than C.S. Lewis's books.
And, yeah, you probably got killed for that, didn't you?
There was some consternation about that. And then there was a few people who sort of whispered, I agree, but they wouldn't admit it publicly. So I'm glad I can speak up for all of you who have better taste in books.
Dude, I actually admitted it in a classical school context.
Ooh.
And I thought I was gonna like die.
They'd never heard of David Foster Wallace, so they didn't know what you do like.
Yeah, man, they were just like, can you send a kid to this school if you don't like The Hobbit? You know, are you actually a Christian?
That was tough. I have another one here, and it's I don't like Radiohead.
Oh, I don't like Radiohead.
But yeah, I feel like Radiohead is the music that everybody who's like me is supposed to like.
Right, if you're white, affluent, extremely educated, thoughtful, quote unquote thoughtful,
and a lot of Christians like them, even though they're a secular band, you know, they're artistic, they're creative. Like their music gives me a pounding headache.
Yeah, to me, it's just boring.
Well, yeah, that too.
I feel bored by it. One like that for me, Pipe. More back in the day than now was U2. Yeah, I never had any interest in U2. You know, nothing against them. There's a couple tracks that I like. You know, a couple tracks kind of get the blood flowing a little bit. But yeah, by and large, no use for you two.
Yeah, I can get that. I mean, but there was no reactive thing there. It wasn't like everybody loves you too, so I'm going to be a contrarian and dislike
you
too.
No.
Just never clicked with their music.
I just never clicked with the music, you know. Yeah, never clicked with the music.
All right, I have one more musical one, and that's I don't like harp music.
And okay.
I feel like it just grates on me, which I think is strange because I think it's supposed to be soothing music. And then there's also sort of this pseudo religious, like it's supposed to be a little heavenly.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
And I think harp music will end up not in heaven. So it's I can't stand it.
Dude, it's funny. We share our building with the music department at my university. And so the first floor, when I walk into work, there's always kids playing instruments. And apparently the best acoustics in the building are right in the lobby, right by the elevator. And there often there's a girl out there playing a harp. And it's never a guy, right? So it's never a guy playing a harp. It's always a girl with like a certain kind of look, kind of that ethereal, doe-eyed, blonde. Like harpists, I think if you're a girl of a certain look or if you're a guy, you're just not playing the harp,
right?
You know? And for me, walking into the building for that like 2 minute stretch, I like the harp music because it feels sort of elevated. You know, it feels kind of exalted, and I just feel like I would love to have a harp like playing me into every building that I walk into.
See, to me, a harp is always a soundtrack. It's like the sound for Turn the Page in the audiobook or whatever, mm-hmm. or you know, like mm-hmm. those ones. It was like the read along book when you were a kid, and it was like, ping,
oh yeah,
and then you would turn. It's that. It's something like some cliched view of heaven. But like just listening to music on harp, or like if the harp is, I went to a church for a while that was much more formal, and they would have a harp up there on Sunday morning sometimes. I don't know. It was kind of the opposite of worshipful for me.
Now, the church that you were in, was the harpist also of this kind of blonde and doe-eyed persuasion?
Yes.
Do you remember?
Okay. They had a few different ones. I think often they brought in students because it was right near Wheaton College and
sure.
big music school there too. So I think they would bring in people from there. So it might have sort of rotated, you're right. I mean, you don't get like there. No harpists have hard edges.
Yeah.
Like period. Yeah. Not personality wise, not look wise, not anything.
Yeah. There's not like a grunge or like a punk way to play the harp.
Yeah. You can't weave that into an aggressive attitude.
Like you only strum down on it, you know, like
you can't sling it low across your hips.
Yeah. You can't sling it low across your hips. You can't only strum down on the harp, but, oh man, that's funny. Pipe. Does that do it for guilty displeasures? Do you have any more?
unless you had any more.
No, I want to hear what you have.
I have one more, and we kind of touched on this in an earlier episode, but I think board games are the most boring things in the world.
Just I'm with you.
Board games in general are awful.
I'm with you.
I mean, I think what did we do an episode on Settlers of Catan at one point?
And, dude, yeah.
But I think that's the worst. Like that's sort of the worst of the worst. But like, I don't like Risk. I don't like Monopoly. I don't like Life. I played Trouble with my kids, but we'll call that a dice game, not a board game. And just board games are the worst.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm with you 100%. 100%. Dude, can I run a, like, before we let you go, and this is just like you and me having a phone call now, but before we sign off, can I run like an office etiquette thing by you?
Oh, please do.
We had a thing happen in our office. So it's the comm department. We've got like, I don't know, a handful of professors and some adjuncts that come up and like use the space. And somebody came into our storage room, and she's kind of loosely connected with the comm department. And there were some t-shirts in there, and there were t-shirts like for the debate team. And she just snagged one. And there's been a lot of dialogue about like what's the etiquette with like if there's just t-shirts laying around.
Yeah.
In a storage room, do you take one? Do you not?
You ask.
You go.
And if you're too embarrassed to ask, that probably tells you shouldn't have them. Because that happens all the time here at Lifeway. Because you know we have so many different brands here. You know, different curriculum lines, and we have student ministries and kids.
Dude,
ministries.
You got swag. You got t-shirts all over the place. I mean, man. It's raining t-shirts.
I could clothe myself all summer in Lifeway gear if I so chose. I don't normally because that's not how I roll. But
yeah.
But yeah, so we have to shut and lock our storage room so that people don't take our jackets or our bags or our whatever. And like, it's a Christian company. I mean, I think that's borderline theft.
Dude, it's funny, man. In the Christian college context too, like there are some interesting like borderline theft scenarios going on at our school. And again, great school, great kids, no different anywhere else probably. But yeah, like students being very like forthcoming about, oh yeah, like I steal toilet paper out of the bathrooms and bring it home to my apartment. And I'm like, really? That just seems weird to me because it's theft, you know?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't belong to you and you didn't pay to put it there in the first place.
I mean, that's, I guess there's an element of like, I get they pay tuition to the school. Is it a school-owned apartment or are they renting off campus? Because that's a different thing. Like if it's...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, if it's on campus, you're just like kind of reappropriating campus resources.
Somebody didn't give you the toilet paper you're supposed to have.
Yeah.
I don't... I think it's... Yeah, it's not so different than... I mean, would you walk into somebody's office and be like, man, that pen on your desk is really nice.
Right.
I think I'll take it.
Dude, or I wouldn't like going to your house and take a leak and walk out with a roll of toilet paper. You know, like... Pipe, I'm just a little low at my house, so
yeah.
You know, I'm just gonna go ahead and take
it. It's
this.
One thing to borrow a cup of sugar from a neighbor, it's quite another to steal a roll of toilet paper.
Exactly. Oh man. Well, thanks for helping me think through that. And Pipe, we have wandered to and fro. And we've run out of time for this episode. But we will, Lord willing, we'll have Ronnie back. We'll see if he's off the road.
Maybe he'll be snowed in Minnesota or something.
I feel like hypothetically, if we were ever to get a custom missional wear t-shirt, which has been talked about for like a year and a half, we could do one with a list of all of Ronnie's tour stops on the back of it. And maybe we should do that.
It's true. Although about 3/4 of them would be cities nobody's ever heard of.
Exactly. But that just adds to the charm.
That's true. It's sort of a hipster flavor.
That makes it more hipster.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like, and I think along with the date and the location, we'd need to have like the purpose of the stop. So like... Denominational meeting, conference.
Moog Factory.
Yeah, Moog Factory.
Missions trip,
hipster donut, conference. Yeah. So, maybe we can get missional wear on that, man.
We'll work with the people.
We'll work with the people who do the thing. But, you know, I'm not hopeful, but that's just another idea to add to the already growing list of ideas. Well, Pipe, it's been fun, man. I've enjoyed this. We've wandered to and fro. Rachel the Held Evans.
Hey there, it's Nicole Eunice from the How to Study the Bible podcast, and I'd love to invite you to join us as we weekly discover a passage of God's Word together. From beginning to end, from principles to practicals, we are here to make sure that God's Word is powerful and relevant to your life. If that sounds like something you're looking for, I would love to invite you to subscribe. You can go to lifeaudio.com and search How to Study the Bible, and we'll see you there.